Deadline's French police used force to disperse angry protesters following a deadly suspected racist attack on a Kurdish center in central Paris. U.S. House of Representatives approves a new $45 billion aid package for Ukraine. This will bring Washington's aid to Kiev to almost $100 billion. And Border Force staff at UK airports joined nationwide strikes by workers in various sectors, prompting warnings of delays for air travelers. Hello everyone, and very warm welcome to World News. Police have clashed with protesters in the French capital, Paris, after a deadly shooting with a suspected racist motive on a Kurdish center. Protesters gathered near the site of the shooting, hurling stones at police, security forces, and fired tear gas and attempted to disperse the crowd. French President Emmanuel Macron called the shooting an odious attack. The Interior Minister has reinforced police protection of the Kurdish community sites in Paris and elsewhere throughout the country. A 69-year-old has been arrested in connection with the shooting, which left three people dead and three others injured. Suspect was known to authorities and had a history of racism and attacks on foreign nationals, especially Kurds. The U.S. House of Representatives has approved a $45 billion aid package for Ukraine. Military and economic assistance is part of a $1.6 trillion government funding bill that had passed the Senate. It will now go to the U.S. President Joe Biden's desk to be signed into law. The U.S. has been Ukraine's main military sponsor in its war with Russia. It's already sent aid worth around $50 billion to Ukraine this year. Russia has repeatedly warned, though, that foreign military aid for Ukraine will only drag out the war and escalate human suffering. The war in Ukraine has plunged Moscow-Washington ties to their lowest in decades. The Russian ambassador to the U.S. has compared the state of relations to the Ice Age, warning of a high risk of a clash. The Russian foreign minister has called for de-escalation in the Armenian majority in Nagorno-Karabakh region, that after the only link between the region and Armenia was blocked by so-called Azerbaijani activists. Lavrov said that he hopes a movement along the Kyiv Road will be restored as soon as possible. He made the remarks following talks with his Azerbaijani counterpart in Moscow. The corridor, which is a key supply route for food, medicine, and fuel, has been obstructed since last week by a group styling itself as environmental activists. Now, Armenia says that they're backed by the Azerbaijani government to create a humanitarian crisis in the mountainous enclave. Baku, however, has accused the Russian peacekeepers of closing the road link. Azerbaijan Republic took control of the disputed Nagorno-Karabakh region after the 2021 war. From nurses to teachers to railway employees, British workers in various sectors have been staging back-to-back walkouts since summer. And now air travelers in the country are warned of delays as passport control staff go on strike just ahead of Christmas. A public and commercial services union says over 1,000 Border Force staff walked off the job Friday. This is the first day of their industrial action, which is due to last until the new year, as they are dissatisfied over pay and demanding raises. According to the union, the government's 2% raise offer just does not keep pace with double-digit inflation. Industrial unrest is expected to upend travel plans in the coming days. Britain's busiest airport, Heathrow, says passengers should be prepared for travel disruptions. The UK is reeling from strikes over pay and working conditions, that amid a cost-of-living crisis combined by fears of a recession.
2022 has been dominated by a cost of living crisis, and the figures are staggering. Inflation is running at a double-digit pace, the highest in 40 years, and far outpacing wage growth. While food prices have shot up almost 20%, and the cost of heating a typical home has jumped more than 150%. As temperatures plummet below zero and desperation rises, key sector worker unions have launched mass strike actions to pressure the government to force wage rises.
The people who are out here on strike today are the same people who not only worked through the pandemic, we worked for the people, we'd get their prescriptions, we would get their milk and bread.
The situation has become so dire in Britain that many families will have to choose whether to heat their homes or feed their families this Christmas.
It is very distressing. It's a situation which, in a way, unimaginable for a country which is supposed to be one of the richest countries in Europe and in the West. Why is it we have these extremes of poverty? Why are people, some people, forced to choose between heating and eating? I mean, there's something completely wrong about our system. We should be plugging and supporting and promoting equality and, you know, not oppressing the poor. You know, there's something which says a lot about our political system, which is flawed.
The government has pinned much of the blame on economic recovery from the COVID era. However, critics say its ruling Conservative Party incompetence and leadership instability that has also left the economy in a dire state. A lesser discussed reason for a European-wide crisis is the ongoing Ukraine war. Britain has remained a staunch supporter of continued fighting, even upping its shipments of arms and financial support.
I think the first is ensuring that we deliver more military aid and that that military aid evolves to meet the situation that we're now facing. And that means more air defence systems, it means artillery, it means armoured vehicles. For our part in the United Kingdom, we've pledged to match or exceed the £2.3 billion in aid that we provided this year, next year.
Low wages, higher fuel costs, inflation and major strike action have all marred 2022. Does the government have what it takes to resolve these many issues in 2023? Probably not. It's going to be a long road with most likely higher taxation, major cuts in public spending and renewed pressure on an already struggling British working class. Robert Carter, London.
A U.S. congressional committee probing the 2021 attack on Capitol Hill has unveiled its final report incriminating former President Donald Trump. In the latest edition of our news review program, we discuss the report and its implication on Trump's bid for re-election.
On this segment of the program, a U.S. congressional panel probing the 2021 attack on the Capitol building has released its final report. It accuses former President Donald Trump of inciting the deadly riots and engaging in a conspiracy to overturn the 2020 election results. The 800-page report is based on more than 1,000 interviews and hundreds of thousands of documents, as well as federal and state court rulings. The report indicates that former President knew he had lost the election, but still pressured officials and his deputy against the vote outcome. He then directly summoned what the committee calls a violent mob and refused to ask his supporters to leave. The report is made public just days after the panel asked the Justice Department to charge Trump for four crimes, including obstruction and insurrection. It's the first time Congress has referred a former president to criminal prosecution in U.S. history. Trump dismisses the committee and its report as a political witch hunt. Well, joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have our correspondent Colin Campbell, who's joining us from Washington, also from Madison. We have editor Veterans Today, Kevin Barrett. Gentlemen, welcome to the program. It's Kevin Barrett, if you may. What are the implications of this report? As Colin mentioned, it's nothing new, but now that it's all in writing, it could make a difference.
Well, I think Colin's right that, you know, Trump probably has more people against him than for him at this point. And some of those people on the Republican side will be stealth opponents. They won't be actively, openly working against him, but they, again, as Colin said, they'd like him to go away. And then, of course, then there's the Liz Cheney faction of Republicans who are vociferously anti-Trump, the never-Trumpers. So, yeah, I think he's now in the minority in Washington. In a sense, he always was. Trump was an outsider president, and that's part of the reason this happened. He's viewed as a disruptive outsider by the permanent national security state, and it's regardless of what you think about many of his decisions and actions, quite a few of which were completely crazy. He did shake things up in Washington and paid the price, and now we have an extreme polarization going on in the electorate and in the country in general, where the narratives that we're getting are not very factual on both sides. We're getting this story of the insurrection from the committee and its supporters, when in fact what really happened was that 99%+ of the people there were peaceful demonstrators who were concerned about the election integrity issue, which actually is a huge issue. And indeed, there's a very strong case that a number of American presidential elections have indeed been stolen. Most obviously, 2000, when a bunch of Republican thugs terrorized the vote counters in Florida, and then the Supreme Coup ruled in favor of Bush and Cheney. And then in 2004, most likely, according to all the polls and the best data, Kerry actually won at least a 3-point, possibly as much as a 6-point popular vote mandate and an electoral vote decisive victory, which was stolen from him by Karl Rove's friends, who, like Mike Connell, Karl Rove's election czar, who oversaw what almost certainly was a massive computer vote fraud theft of that election from John Kerry, which Kerry, the skull and bones companion of Bush, was probably okay with. So we have a real problem with our elections in this country. The Democrats have long been in denial about this, even though they're the ones who actually were robbed, worse than the Republicans. Historically, people should look at Jonathan Simon's work for the details. So what we have right now is a bizarre situation where suddenly there's a group that's upset about election integrity, and it's the Republicans who've actually, that's the party that's been stealing most of the elections. And then we have the party that says, oh, none of this ever happens, that's, you know, completely in denial, and that's the Democrats. And they're both putting out these mythological narratives that have very little to do with fact. So I think that, you know, we're really in a crisis right now in the United States. Belief in the, you know, faith in the political system is at an all-time low. Faith in the media is at an all-time low. And something's got to give. I don't know what it's going to be.
Colin, do you think that this will ultimately lead to Donald Trump being ineligible for the next presidential elections?
Yeah, if he is indicted, it definitely could be. A lot of people feel that's mixed. I mean, there are large implications for indicting a former president. Will this become some type of weaponization of the intelligence agency and, of course, the Department of Justice for future former presidents? There are some implications there. Others say, listen, justice needs to be done here. There were some serious grievances and some serious malfeasance that was accomplished here, and that needs to be taken into consideration and acted upon. And I think that there are more people who think that the latter will be the overlying wisdom here than the former, because if something is not done, this could also send a message for future politicians who want to engage in unlawful practices or unconstitutional actions, and they would go unpunished. So I think that there's a high probability here that the Department of Justice will bring charges, but it's unclear how that will go forward from there.
All right, thanks a lot, gentlemen. Colin Campbell joining us from Washington, and Kevin Barrett, editor of Veterans Today, joining us from Madison. With that, it brings us to an end here on this edition of the News Review, but stick around, there's plenty more to come.
And welcome back to everyone. Northeastern part of the United States is witnessing a surge in COVID cases as millions of Americans begin their Christmas holiday travels. Highly contagious Omicron subvariant XBB is now accounting for more than half the cases. XBB is estimated to make up more than 18% of coronavirus cases in the U.S., up from around 11% the previous week. And the holiday travel could speed up the subvariant spread across the country. Now, this is while the government says that updated COVID booster shots, which target Omicron and some of its subvariants, do not provide optimal protection against the XBB subvariant. Thousands of flights have been canceled in the U.S. as a massive winter storm brings airport operations down to a crawl. Nearly 7,000 flights were canceled Thursday and Friday, leaving holiday travelers frustrated. The FAA, that's the Federal Aviation Administration, imposed ground stops and delays to de-ice a number of airport runways. As a result, some 4,000 U.S. flights were also delayed on Friday. Poor weather conditions have also disrupted railroad travel throughout the holiday season, forcing the cancellations of dozens of trains. Palestinian resistance movements Hamas and Islamic Jihad have slammed the Israeli killing of a young Palestinian man near Tel Aviv. Islamic Jihad pledged Israeli crimes will never undermine the determination of the Palestinian people to liberate their country. Hamas also emphasized that Palestinian resistance will continue and even escalate until the end of Israeli occupation and establishment of a Palestinian state with Al-Quds as capital. Israeli forces shot dead Naim Badir in the town of Kafr Qasim on Friday. They allege he carried out a car ramming attack, injuring three Israeli troops. The latest killing comes amid heightened tensions between Israeli forces and Palestinians, particularly in the West Bank. Israeli forces have killed over 220 Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza Strip since the beginning of this year. Earlier, our correspondent Mona Kandil joined us from Ramallah for more details on Naim Badir's killing. She said the victim's family denies the Israeli claims of a car ramming attack.
What happened, according to the Israeli police story, is that this Palestinian man, where of course the Israeli regime considered as Arab Israeli, not a Palestinian. Naim Badir, 23-year-old, according to the Israeli police, he called the Israeli police and claimed that there is an urgent incident in his home. And then Israeli police officers were dispatched there. They claimed that he was in his vehicle and that he ran his vehicle into the police officers. Then he escaped. They chased him and he opened fire at them, according, of course, to the Israeli police story. He wounded two Israeli police officers, and he was shot dead at the there next to his home. The family denies the story. They say that the Israeli police story is mistaken and that they killed their son in cold blood. Following the incident, Israeli police arrested a number of Naim Badir family members and took them for interrogation.
Thanks for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
IRIB English Radio. Good morning.
Good morning.
In the limelight.
Up to 35,000 homes across Britain are facing at least 24 hours without water after a surge in frozen burst pipes. Streets have been flooded in Sussex, Kent, Hertfordshire, Essex and Lancashire. Arctic temperatures have given way this week to a balmy 15 degrees centigrade. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Independent has covered this story and tells us more. In Britain, tens of thousands of homes have been left without running water after thawing snow and ice caused a surge in burst pipes. Residents in Kent, Sussex, Hertfordshire and Essex have been forced to turn to bottled water as providers scrambled to restore supplies as households went more than 24 hours without running water. Southeast Water said as many as 15,000 properties had seen their running water disrupted, as they faced a 300% increase in the number of burst pipes than usual. This included Tunbridge Wells and surrounding areas. Meanwhile, Southern Water said properties in Kent were without running water. As many as 20,000 homes may have been impacted. Affinity Water said 8,000 of its customers, mostly in Hertfordshire and Essex, have had their supplies interrupted. In an update at 7 a.m. on Tuesday, 20th of December, the water company said, "We're deeply sorry for the distress and inconvenience that this incident is causing. Our teams worked throughout the night to fix the burst water main so that we can return supply to our customers." It added, "The repair is now complete. However, it's going to take time to get water flowing through the network and supply returns." The company previously commented on the cause behind the burst pipes. "On a normal winter's day, we extract, treat and pump an average of 520 million litres of drinking water a day to our customers. But during the past 24 hours, this has increased by 100 million litres to 620 million litres. This has resulted in many of our drinking water storage tanks, which hold treated water before it is pumped to our customers, going empty or very low. Although we planned for this, we cannot predict when and where pipes will burst and are reacting as quickly as possible." Residents in Broadstairs, Manston, Margate and Ramsgate in Kent woke up to no running water on Monday morning, but Southern Water have since said water supplies in these areas have almost fully returned after the burst water main was successfully fixed. Thousands of homes in Lancashire also reportedly had their water switched off on Monday due to burst pipes and leaks. Hilary Wills from Benenden in Kent said, "She first noticed her water was cut off in the morning. While it's just her and her husband in their home at the moment, she's expecting up to 12 guests in the next couple of days for Christmas." Southeast Water said, "We're still working hard to balance the demand for drinking water with supply following the cold snap. Some customers are experiencing intermittent water supplies, and we're so sorry for any disruption that this may be causing." Bottled water stations were opened at a rugby club in Haywards Heath in West Sussex, a golf club in Crowborough and a leisure centre in Tunbridge in Kent. Snow and ice have been rapidly melting as temperatures increase after days of wintry conditions in the United Kingdom. Aviva, an insurance company, has urged people to watch out for water leaks as the weather becomes warmer and frozen pipes start to thaw. A Southern Water spokesperson said on Tuesday, "We are sorry for the distress and inconvenience caused to our customers by the disruption to water supplies in Thanet in Kent." A spokesperson for the RAC, Rod Dennis, warned that melting ice could lead to dangerous driving conditions. Rod Dennis of the RAC said, "With weather conditions in many places this week being almost the exact opposite of last week, drivers getting away for Christmas need to be on their guard." The British newspaper The Daily Mail has also covered the same story. Up to 30,000 homes across Britain are facing at least 24 hours without water after warm air from Madeira caused extraordinary rise in temperatures in Britain. The drastic change to milder weather has caused thousands of homes to be left without water, which could last until Friday, 23rd of December. Families in Morecambe and Lancaster in Lancashire are suffering leaks after freezing conditions gave way to 15 degrees Celsius temperatures, while astonishing video footage from Thanet in Kent shows water running in the streets. Meteorology expert from the University of Reading, Dr. Stephen Burt, called it an extraordinary rise of almost 20 degrees Celsius in just a few days, after his hometown of Reading rose from minus 5 degrees Celsius last week to 12 degrees Celsius yesterday. Residents in part of Morecambe and Lancaster in Lancashire are facing 24 hours without water after a number of leaks and burst pipes. United Utilities says it's due to freezing conditions giving way to warmer weather. It's providing bottled water at three locations for its customers. Stephen Burt, the meteorology expert from the University of Reading, said very mild and humid tropical maritime air from the region of Madeira transported quickly north and eastwards to our islands because of the development of a major North Atlantic depression over the past few days. The Met Office has issued a yellow weather warning for rain across much of southern England and Wales. Customers in East Grinstead in West Sussex have been cut off, as well as large areas of Kent, and bottled water distribution stations have been set up. South-South-East Water apologised for the pressure drop and said they needed demand for water to reduce. Our team of technicians are working around the clock using a variety of methods to reroute water around the network and ease pressure on our system. On a normal winter's day, we extract, treat and pump an average of 520 million litres of drinking water a day to our customers, but in the past 24 hours this has increased by 100 million litres to 620 million litres. This has resulted in many of our drinking water storage tanks, which hold treated water before it is pumped to our customers, going empty or very low. Although we planned for this, we cannot predict when and where pipes will burst and are reacting as quickly as possible. Experts warned last week that Britain would likely face a burst pipe Monday as temperatures rocketed after yesterday's so-called Snow Sunday chaos. The United Kingdom is shivering through one of the coldest Decembers for the past 122 years, with thermometers having averaged just a fraction of a degree above freezing so far this month. Experts warn today's thaw would see tens of thousands of homes suffer burst pipes.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and since people in the West are on the threshold of Christmas, which Christians believe to be the birth anniversary of Prophet Jesus, peace be upon him, we hereby present you a thought-stimulating statement from the virgin-born Messiah, as recorded in the Gospel of St. Barnabas, about the coming of the last messenger of God, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. O blessed time, when he shall come to the world, believe me that I have seen him and have done him reverence, even as every prophet has seen him, seeing that of his spirit God gives to them prophecy. And when I saw him, my soul was filled with consolation, saying, O Muhammad, God be with you, and may he make me worthy to untie your shoe latchet. For obtaining this, I shall be a great prophet and holy one of God.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, family pathology and theological doubts. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of family pathology and the theological doubts in the Islamic lifestyle. We know that in order to have an Islamic lifestyle, we must have a firm knowledge of Islam, because you know, when we want to follow something, we must know about it. We must have the knowledge, the enough knowledge about that thing. One of the issues that we see in today's family life, when we see that the people are having the issues in their family life, or the family system is becoming weak, it is because that the people are not well aware of their religion. They are not aware of the theological terms, or you know, the things that are said, and therefore their beliefs become weak. So this is because when they have theological doubts in their mind and they don't solve it, and later when they have kids and they cannot explain it to their kids, we see that unfortunately some families face the difficulties. Some families, their kids face many difficulties. For example, you know, one of the theological doubts can be the religious pluralism. If the religious pluralism, the concept is not clear for the people who are the Muslims, that what does religious pluralism means, then obviously the kids, the families, they become secular. And that's why we see in Islam Muslims becoming secular because of this ideology. Why? Because they never could solve these issues. For example, another example can be the doubt about the justice. When they do not know that Allah is just and what does it mean, then obviously they will have these issues in their life. Therefore, it is necessary to get the knowledge, the true knowledge, and to be firm in following the Islam, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of the family pathology and theological doubts in the Islamic lifestyle. We said that when the family members, when the parents, the guardians, they do not have the enough knowledge about the Islam, then obviously the issues comes in the family. For example, the parents, obviously, they have learned something. They were believing in a God. They were believing that the God is just, but they don't know how to explain it. They do not have the reasons. They never read about it. And it is necessary to read about your beliefs, because Quran is the book of guidance. Since our parents, the people, they never read the Quran, they never read the whole Quran in order to know the proofs or reasons that why we believe in God, why we believe in the hereafter, why we believe in the prophets, what was the characteristics of the prophets. When our kids go to the schools and they have doubts or the questions about the creation of the man, for example, they go to the school, they learn the Darwinism, they learn about the Big Bang Theory, and we as a parent, because we never read the Quran, because we never went through these questions, we believe because of our parents, and we don't know it from the actual source, the knowledge, the source of knowledge. Therefore, we cannot answer. And there we see that the relation between the kids and the parents, it becomes weaker. So there is a dispute amongst them. There is always the father is, you know, they see that maybe like their father is forcing them to go to the mosque, and it looks like something which is forcefully being done to them. And the main reason is that because our families have not gained the enough knowledge about these issues, that's why these things are happening. Therefore, if we want to have a good Islamic lifestyle, a pure Islamic lifestyle, we must go after the knowledge. We must learn these things so that tomorrow we can explain the things truly and easily to our kids, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Of the border.
Part 2.
The picture of my mother hugging me wholeheartedly. A child born in the border tents of the Iranian Red Crescent. I am the child of the border. My name is Najiba. I studied psychology, but my main interest in filmmaking led me to study cinema directing at the Iranian Youth Cinema Society. I am concerned with the troubles of Afghan refugees. I go to them to document their life story. They were not and are not financially motivated. They believe that empathy and cooperation go beyond nationalities. In the management of their venture, they resort to the same method. Isfahan Handicrafts Market is one of the main markets in Iran. Mr. Afzali has his own shop here and sells the items produced in his workshop. I used to work in this workshop as a teenager. His craftsmanship always fascinates me. He wanted his workers to continue their studies. He read a lot and asked everyone to raise their awareness, as he believed that the misery of Afghanistan is the low awareness of its people. Every new tension in Afghanistan spurs a new wave of asylum seekers on to move to Iran. Some of them enter Iran illegally to use it as a springboard to head to European countries. Iran is at the receiving end of the fight against illegal immigrants to Europe. These people cause trouble for the security state in Iran, people who are not registered anywhere and have to accede to the worst conditions to reach their goal. Children are victims of this vicious cycle. Children who have to endure countless injuries and join child labor gangs. The Welfare Organization of Iran is in charge of supporting these children. Sadaf Welfare Center is one of these centers that operates in Mashhad. Here, Iranian and Afghan working children live together and enjoy similar facilities. After providing basic conditions and empowerment, the center strives to return the children to their families. To keep undocumented Afghan children out of harm's way in Iran, Iranian leader Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei ordered their registration in public schools without needing to provide residency permits. By itself, this very decree has changed the lives of many such children who'd otherwise be recruited by illegal child labor bans. Moreover, Afghan children with disabilities are admitted in special schools just like their Iranian peers. There is no discrimination in their education. Right from the beginning, an asylum seeker fights to maintain the minimum of living standards. Being challenged and endurance overshadow their entire livelihood. Preservation of life, family, identity, and hope help the asylum seekers keep going. The spirit of resistance remains alive in them, and they try to convey it to the future generations. Mr. Ahmadi decided to learn the recitation of the Quran professionally, in addition to casting and sports. He went to the main center for teaching Quran recitation in Iran. At first, he thought he might be frowned upon in the center because of his religious differences. Mr. Ahmadi became a master after 9 years. He holds Quran teaching sessions for the children of asylum seekers. He believes that interfaith culture should be taught to children. Most Afghan refugees who come to Iran follow a different religious sect than the official Islamic sect in Iran. Asylum seekers need to be able to hold their religious services in complete freedom. Are there no problems for asylum seekers in Iran? Well, of course there are, but some problems have legal roots and some have economic ones. The Islamic Republic of Iran has been subject to the most severe international sanctions in recent years. These sanctions have created serious economic problems for the Iranian people, as well as Afghan refugees. Speaking of the cultural commonalities between Iran and Afghanistan is a limitless topic. From ancient rituals to religious rites, from music to architecture, from literature to handicrafts, they are so intertwined that I have to highlight the differences rather than the similarities. I have come to visit two blind sisters, Mariam and Salimeh Gholami. I was utterly astounded by their determination. They are Afghans, but were born in Iran. I cannot believe that these items are their work. I'm curious to know how they did it. They cannot see what they weave. Only we see the beauty of their art, and they get pleasure from us enjoying their work. Every year, a book is published from the collection of exquisite works of Iranian handicraft masters. Mr. Afzali's works can be seen in all of them. Mr. Afzali is known as one of the leading artists in Iran. He has trained many students, some of whom have gone to European countries. Every time I look at his works, I see my lost identity. Asylum seekers are victims of a mess they have no part in. They have no choice but to leave their homeland. They give up their identity in the hope of saving their lives and those of their family members. An identity whose absence nettles them. But they keep on and build their new world, either alone or with the help of others.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The Arctic is getting rainier and seasons are shifting, with broad consequences for people, ecosystems, and wildlife. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of Common Dreams wrote in this regard, "In the Arctic, the freedom to travel, hunt, and make day-to-day decisions is profoundly tied to cold and frozen conditions for much of the year. These conditions are rapidly changing as the Arctic warms. The Arctic is now seeing more rainfall when historically it would be snowing. Sea ice that once protected coastlines from erosion during fall storms is forming later. And thinner river and lake ice is making travel by snowmobile increasing life-threatening. Ship traffic in the Arctic is also increasing, bringing new risks to fragile ecosystems, and the Greenland ice sheet is continuing to send fresh water and ice into the ocean, raising global sea level. In the annual Arctic report card released on December 13, 2022, some scientists were brought together to examine the current state of the Arctic system. It was found that Arctic precipitation is on the rise across all seasons, and these seasons are shifting. Much of this new precipitation is now falling as rain, sometimes during winter and traditionally frozen times of the year. This disrupts daily life for humans, wildlife, and plants. Roads become dangerously icy more often, and communities face greater risk of river flooding events. For indigenous reindeer herding communities, winter rain can create an impenetrable ice layer that prevents their reindeer from accessing vegetation beneath the snow. Arctic-wide, this shift toward wetter conditions can disrupt the lives of animals and plants that have evolved for dry and cold conditions, potentially altering Arctic people's local foods. When Fairbanks, Alaska, got 1.4 inches of freezing rain in December 2021, the moisture created an ice layer that persisted for months, bringing down trees and disrupting travel. Infrastructure and the ability of some Arctic animals to forage for food. The resulting ice layer was largely responsible for the deaths of a third of a bison herd in interior Alaska. There are multiple reasons for this increase in Arctic precipitation. As sea ice rapidly declines, more open water is exposed, which feeds increased moisture into the atmosphere. The entire Arctic region has seen a more than 40% loss in summer sea ice extent over the 44-year satellite record. The Arctic atmosphere is also warming more than twice as fast as the rest of the globe, and this warmer air can hold more moisture. Under the ground, the wetter, rainier Arctic is accelerating the thaw of permafrost, upon which most Arctic communities and infrastructure are built. The result is crumbling buildings, sagging and cracked roads, the emergence of sinkholes and the collapse of community coastlines along rivers and ocean. Wetter weather also disrupts the building of a reliable winter snowpack and safe, reliable river ice, and often challenges indigenous communities' efforts to harvest and secure their food. When Typhoon Merbak hit in September 2022, fueled by unusually warm Pacific water, its hurricane-force winds, 50-foot waves, and far-reaching storm surge damaged homes and infrastructure over 1,000 miles of Bering Sea coastline and disrupted hunting and harvesting at a crucial time. Snow plays critical roles in the Arctic, and the snow season is shrinking. Snow helps to keep the Arctic cool by reflecting incoming solar radiation back to space, rather than allowing it to be absorbed by the darker, snow-free ground. Its presence helps lake ice last longer into spring and helps the land to retain moisture longer into summer, preventing overly dry conditions that are ripe for devastating wildfires. Snow is also a travel platform for hunters and a habitat for many animals that rely on it for nesting and protection from predators. A shrinking snow season is disrupting these critical functions. For example, the June snow cover extent across the Arctic is declining at a rate of nearly 20% per decade, marking a dramatic shift in how the snow season is defined and experienced across the North. Even in the depth of winter, warmer temperatures are breaking through. The far northern Alaska town of Ojiavik hit 40 degrees Fahrenheit, or 4.4 degrees Celsius, 8 Fahrenheit above, on December 5, 2022, even though the sun does not breach the horizon from mid-November through mid-January. Fatal falls through thin sea, lake, and river ice are on the rise across Alaska, resulting in immediate tragedies as well as adding to the cumulative human cost of climate change that Arctic indigenous peoples are now experiencing on a generational scale. The impacts of Arctic warming are not limited to the Arctic. In 2022, the Greenland ice sheet lost ice for 25th consecutive year. This adds to rising seas, which escalates the danger coastal communities around the world must plan for to mitigate flooding and a storm surge. In early September 2022, the Greenland ice sheet experienced an unprecedented late-season melt event across 36% of the ice sheet surface. This was followed by another even later melt event that same month, caused by the remnants of Hurricane Fiona moving up along eastern North America. International teams of scientists are dedicated to assessing the scale to which the Greenland ice sheet's ice formation and ice loss are out of balance. They are also increasingly learning about the transformative role that warming ocean waters play. This year's Arctic report card includes findings from NASA Ocean's Melting Greenland OMG mission that has confirmed that warming ocean temperatures are increasing ice loss at the edges of ice sheets. Midstream.
Criminal and psychotic lawyer, Prime Minister-elect of the Zionist entity Benjamin Netanyahu utilized the Saudi Al Arabiya channel in his first interview with an Arab media outlet to launch a series of very traditional lies, dull to the point of political disgust. Netanyahu seemed like a gullible, spoiled brat with that interview, tried to play smart about the peace process, the Palestinian cause, and the U.S. relationship with Saudi Arabia, claiming that he will discuss the deterioration of the kingdom's relations with the Biden administration. Oh, isn't he Mr. Fix-It-All? During the interview on Thursday, December 15, 2022, he said, "I think we are facing the possibility of not just expanding peace. I think we can have a new peace initiative that would constitute a quantum leap to achieve a solution to both the Arab-Israeli conflict and ultimately the Palestinian-Israeli conflict." Then, in what seems like a monologue out of a Disney movie, Netanyahu said, "I'm referring to what could be a truly wonderful historic peace with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, and that peace with Saudi Arabia will change our region in unimaginable ways." Netanyahu spoke about a wonderful historic peace, but only after Saudi Arabia presents all its cards to normalize its relations with the Zionist entity. But is either side here thinking about how such a normalization will affect all the Islamic world, not only Palestine? Only if Al Arabiya journalists would complete their job and ask him what is the type of that peace he sees that would resolve the Arab-Israeli conflict and put an end to the Palestinian calamity. Does it include recognition of United Nations Resolution 1967 of 2012 on the state of Palestine according to the borders that came in the text of that resolution? And does he consider President Mahmoud Abbas a true partner in peace? But that brings the question whether Mahmoud Abbas is the legitimate representative of the Palestinian struggle at this day and age. Or maybe will Netanyahu's government commit to stopping all forms of Judaization of Palestinian areas? Or will his government consider Al-Quds an occupied land that will be the capital of the state of Palestine? Or will they end once and for all the issue of the outcasted Palestinians who took refuge in countries all over the world and negotiated in accordance with international law? Does this historic peace include stopping the Zionist entity from expanding illegal colonial settlements in the West Bank or halting its continuous murderous aggression against the largest open-air prison on earth known as the Gaza Strip? These are just some of the clear questions that would define the essence of that wonderful historic peace that Netanyahu spoke of. But it all comes down to this. Does Mohammed bin Salman care about any of the above-mentioned inquiries to begin with? Welcome to the Mideast Stream. I'm Marwa Osman.